Welcome to Take a Wonder with Shebs, the show that features some of the biggest travel bloggers, TV and radio personalities, and journalists from all around the world. Each show aims to take my guest on a wonder and uncover topics that may not be discussed on their platforms or in the media, whether that's the state of travel blogging and journalism as it is today, or whether there's enough diversity within the industry. Perhaps what impact technology and social media have had on content creation, or in general the impact of current affairs on the industry. I also try and find out the journey behind each individual's success, as this is more important to me than the actual travel. My guest at this point is award-winning travel writer, travel blogger from GoWeDo, Stuart Foster. Stuart, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on. Whereabouts are you and how are you?
Hi, Shebs. Thanks for having us. I'm actually in sunny Gateshead today in the northeast of England. Good to be with you.
So for people who don't know who you are, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a travel writer. I'm a photographer too, and I run the blog Go Eat Do. And Go Eat Do has got about 52% female followers, 48% male. It attracts people who are interested in travel, hotels, the arts, food, and accommodation. Most of the followers are in the UK, but nearly 50% of the followers are in the UK. There's about 16% in the USA and 13% in Canada. So there's a good spread and a few other pockets from around the world.
I'll come on to your blog and how you grew it. After I've asked you a couple of questions about your early stages and how you got to the position of where you are right now, tell us how you actually fell in love with travel and were you always in the travel industry before starting GoWeDo?
Fell in love with travel through just personal experiences. Interrail tours were really the things that got me into it because I was intrigued to travel in Europe, see countries that I'd only read about or seen on television or in films. And I really wanted to get out there and experience them. So buying Interrail tickets when I was younger, that was a way of doing that, was a way of really experiencing.
Just for people who don't know, what is Interrail ticket?
Interrail is a multi-day pass or rail within Europe. The Americans, North Americans might know it as U-Rail, but in Europe, we can get those tickets, they're international. It just allowed me to travel on a night train, so I didn't have to spend money on hotels. It meant I could build an itinerary for about a month and travel around Europe and keep costs to a minimum. And that really engendered an interest and a passion for travel that I've never lost. And it wasn't a career that I started in initially. I used to play a lot of basketball and I was also in IT. And I did those for quite a while. I kind of fell into it because, you know, you get sidetracked, you do other things. And really I was just earning money. But I'd always been interested in photography. I'd trained as a photographer in my teens, and that was always something that I wanted to come back and do. And I did that after a few years. I realized that the IT industry really wasn't for me at all. You know, it was great in terms of earning a living, safe, sensible. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I thought, well, we've got one life. We've got one opportunity to really do the things that we want to do. And I started picking up work, bits and pieces of work for a publication. And it really acted as a springboard to go on and do more and more. And as my self-belief in the photography and the travel writing grew, that's when it became a full-time career.
When did you move away from the IT industry that you're in?
I've been doing this now for 17 years, so I've been quite a long time in travel writing and photography. I just reached out to editors. I built up a portfolio. And then in 2013, I established Go Eat Do because what I realized was I was going on press trips and taking some of my own trips too, where I was experiencing stories or getting in touch with really interesting people that weren't the main focus of the story that an editor had necessarily taken as what they wanted for their newspaper or magazine. I thought, you know what, I need to tell these stories too. And of course, having a blog, it seemed like a good way of showcasing work and showcasing some of the places and things that I was doing, as well as being a little bit of a thank you for the people who who went out of the way sometimes to help me when I was on location.
How did you break into it then? Because it's very difficult, because you might have all the knowledge, you might have all the skills, writing skills. People might take degrees within the travel writing industry or journalism anyway, but the initial breakthrough is always difficult. So what was your journey in breaking into it first?
I had some really great people that I got in contact with. I had a portfolio of photography that I could show them. And in a particular guidebook, at the back of it, they wrote, if you think you could provide photographs, let us know. So I did. I contacted them, got in touch, and said, I think that some of my photographs are better than the ones that you're using. So it was a bit of a crazy, naive, self-belief and arrogance, silly. But, you know.
Sometimes that's what you need, don't you?
Well, yeah, I did have the portfolio. I could back it up by showing the portfolio to the people. We had a chat, and they commissioned me to do a series of pieces. I think there was one first test piece. They were happy with what they saw there. And then I was commissioned to do 8 other pieces. And that was interesting. Now, I studied history, and I thought from that I could write, because I'd written essays, I'd written dissertations. I thought, well, you know what? I can write. But writing a feature for a publication is so different to writing an academic essay. And it was a real slap, you know, I mean, I was really brought down to earth. The kind of hubris that made me get the opportunity in the first place. It was also interesting to talk to the experienced journalists and see how far I actually was from being able to do what I thought I could do. And I used to go and sit with them in the office, and they would just basically get the red pen out and say, yeah, this is wrong, that's wrong, made them, you know, don't do this, don't do that, try this, try that. And I got tips, and I went away, worked, read other books about how to write, and really just worked at it for a long, long time. I mean, I'm still working at it, really. It's a never-ending story. But that feedback from people who'd been doing what I do now for a long time was invaluable, and I'll forever be grateful for them.
This is where I think having a mentor maybe is quite important. And as you said, that you were surrounded by experienced people, and they got the red pen out and said, no, don't do this. I think we all need to have a mentor continuously throughout our careers to improve and get better, because things change, obviously, as time goes on. Yeah. With the way writing changes, photography changes, as you just said, there, photography changes, videography, everything changes. So you have to be level-headed to say, right, okay, I'm going to have to change with time as well. So mentors are
absolutely
really good.
Absolutely. I think you're right, because if you look at the kind of travel writing that was popular, let's say in the 70s or the 80s, and if you were to read that today, I'm sure that it would look incredibly dated and be picking the kinds of things that just wouldn't interest people today. It might be well written in places, it might, but writing styles have changed. I think the attention spans of people, that's some of the all editors point out now, they have dropped over the years. So you need to be more direct, you need to get the points across a lot quicker. Something I'm not doing right now, I notice. It's really something that you just need to be forever open to. I think you've got to keep an open mind, you've got to be open to feedback. Having a mentor, I think, would be great. I mean, you know, I am experienced in the industry, but from time to time, I think everybody has dips and troughs that a mentor could help them bridge, help get them through. And, you know, having that kind of professional help would be something that would be invaluable, not just to people who are coming into the industry, but people who have been in it for many, many years.
Major publications will always have an editor. If you've got that luxury of, if you're not a freelancer, that is, having a good editor to tell you, right, this is good, but you could do better, is yeah, also invaluable, as most yeah, journalists will listen in thinking, yeah, you're absolutely right. But we might not be in that position if we're a freelancer, then having someone there. And I don't necessarily have mentors who I pay, by the way, but people that I know within the industry, friends, happy to help. And if you've got those types of people around you, surrounding is really, really important. And if you can get a good volume of network around you that can help, we can help one another, not necessarily them just giving you, it's what you give back as well.
Yeah, it's not just one-way traffic. I think you learn from each other in this, because to monitor all the trends within the industry, one person alone doing that, it's incredibly difficult, because how do you manage to keep an eye on what's going on in videography? How do you manage to keep an eye on what's going on in what you're doing, for example, right now? The various different publications, the formats of publication, online, print. You know, one person doing that, it's nigh on impossible. But if you've got a good group of people with whom you can communicate, ask questions, support each other, and bounce ideas around, that's great. I think sometimes as an individual, as a freelancer, working alone, you're almost in an echo chamber, because if you've got a doubt, self-doubt, or something that's bugging you, sometimes it can blow up into a problem. Whereas if you're talking through with other people in the industry, they might say, you know, right now, for example, during the lockdown, nobody's getting answers back from editors. It's not just you. That's some kind of solace. It doesn't change that it was tough for travel writers during the lockdown, but it is some kind of solace to realize that it's not just yourself that is suffering in a particular way. And I think it is great when you can communicate through forums and with colleagues, and just get those ideas out there, and it's, you know, it's mutually supportive, it really is. So yeah, it's important.
The writing for publications is one thing, but starting a blog is also another. What inspired you to start GoEatDo, and why did you want to go into a sector where it's mainly about food?
I started because I was getting frustrated with the fact I was getting significantly more information on the road than I was necessarily expecting. There's sometimes great stories, and other times people were incredibly helpful, and I wanted to say thanks for the inputs that they were given by being able to write their stories. And so that was a driving force behind it. I didn't realize just how difficult it would be to start a blog. When I began it in 2013, I didn't understand anything really about search engine optimization. I've learned a lot during the lockdown, used the downtime there to learn a lot about that.
So it took you a good few years before you actually learned about
that. I wasn't really bothering with search engine optimization and that kind of thing, because I was just writing stories. I wasn't even thinking about the difference of what it takes to write and maintain a blog compared to, say, writing a newspaper feature. I really wasn't looking at the differences.
So writing for your own blog and writing for a major newspaper publication, it's a major outlet. They might not necessarily need the SEO, the search engine optimization, to pull people into it, because they're well known. To having a blog, need to have those keywords, for example?
I think that it is a very crowded marketplace. I try to stand out through quality. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I really try, and that's what I'm striving for. I'm trying to create quality pieces that inform, that read well, that look good because of the photos and more recently the videos that I've been creating. But it's an incredibly difficult marketplace to stand out in. There's some very good bloggers, and there's also a proliferation of people there who know what to do to be seen and play the game. And I think there are, you know, certain blogs that are very well search engine optimized and get seen, but I'm not sure about the quality of the content within. And so it's an interesting space to be trying to be seen in. I love it though, because it's self-expression. You know, the great thing is, I know that sometimes if I'm traveling, that a piece that's going to go into a magazine, it might be months away from publication, whereas I can do something different from the same location and get it on the blog within days of actually returning from those experiences. And that's great because it's showing some kind of immediate return. And it's also great for me to feel, after I've been somewhere, that I'm creating something and producing something.
You might get blogs which lack maybe quality, but perhaps they're going for that SEO. So do you think authenticity is important then within a blog?
I think you've got to be authentic in yourself when you're in this industry because it's creative. I can way more easily write well about the things that I'm interested in, whether it's walking, whether it's photography, whether it's the food and drink that I taste, if it's something that I genuinely am interested in, because I've got a bit of background knowledge and that shines through. I make comparisons. I understand how it fits within the whole global scale of what I'm experiencing at the time. So authenticity is important. And I think that those personal experiences, when you write about them and bring them through, I think it brings people with you. You can bring color into what you write, the expressions, the descriptions that can shine through. And I think it's really great when people use their own photographs rather than just stock images that provided by whoever for free. It's great when people are taking their own photographs and showing their own perspective, because it shows that people are really experiencing a place, interacting with a place, and not just ticking boxes and not just going for the most popular experiences. Because if we were to go out on a trip together, that might be a framework that we share, but equally, I'm sure that there'd be bits that would peel off and do our own thing. And those experiences would be the kind of thing, in addition to the main attractions. I mean, if you're in Paris, you definitely do want to see the Eiffel Tower. You definitely do want to see the Louvre, the key attractions, that kind of thing. But also, it might be the restaurants that would go in may differ, the little quirky experiences, the little passionate things that you might have read about or seen in a film. You think, I just want to see this because I know it from whatever my favorite film is. That's the kind of thing that I think makes travel rewarding. And telling your story about that and the kind of people that you meet on the road, just those one-to-one interactions when you're sat in a cafe and you have a lovely conversation with somebody, that can be the start of a story.
A lot of blogs that you might see, they may go down the route of, well, this is going to make me the most money or it's going to get me more attention. Have you ever fell for that trap, or is it always quality, authenticity, and not really having a gimmick? Because I've seen a lot of blogs where they keep changing their gimmick and they keep it, because I don't know what's going on. I thought this blog was about so and so, now they're doing this. Have you ever thought about that, or have you always just stuck to your guns and, right, this is what I want to do, that's it, and if the quality shows, it shows?
You know what, when I started going, I jotted down on an A4 pad, pretty much like this one, a few different words about what I was aiming to do, and I subconsciously ringed three of them, and those were the words go, eat, and do, because it was ultimately about the places that I go to, the experiences that I have while eating, and the do bit is the experiences. It might be, you know, zip lining or cycling or whatever. It's a wide net, that really. I don't want to be too narrow, because when I travel, I want to be open to what the experiences of a place offer. I don't always want to be only going into a destination to have one narrow experience. That might be a little bit gimmicky. For some people, it's authenticity. So it's getting that balance right. But the reason I named Go Eat Do the way it is named is purely because I think it gives me the spectrum to write about the things that I'm genuinely interested in. In some ways, having a narrower focus, a niche, could be beneficial, because if I was only writing about steam train journeys and I named it that, and I was only going around the world doing journeys on steam trains, that I would be the person to go to, and I would probably leverage the blog more effectively for money. So it's getting that balance, really. I think in a professional world, you want to be able to leverage what you do to make to bring income, to make money. But I don't think you ever really want to sell out your soul and then publish the kind of things that don't really stand up to scrutiny. If you were sat down and just really being honest to yourself, I think everything that you write has got to reflect your true viewpoints. I think that's really, really important.
Do you mainly focus on your blog now because of where it is today, or do you still have to go and get commission for publications, or is your blog monetizing enough not to do that?
It's a slow process, to be honest. I'm not where as far on as I'd like to be, because I'm still going through it after what I've learned during the lockdown and doing a little bit more search engine optimization. I love writing for publications. I love writing for magazines. I love writing for newspapers, but I also love writing for my blog. So I want to get that balance where I can keep a bit of each, because it's a different kind of creativity. It really is. It's a case of I want to tell stories. I want to show the world where I've been and enthuse people to experience some of the things that I've done. It won't be for everybody, but if people can look at what I'm writing and possibly think, you know what, one day I'd like to do that, or yeah, I'm going to do that, I'm going to book it now, that's great, you know. Or if it even just highlights some of the experiences that I have when I'm traveling in the world, and people read up a bit more about an issue that might make them think about, then that's great.
Well, you talked about a lot of challenges that you have within the blogging world and writing. You are very established. Notice you won many awards and been nominated for a lot of these accolades. That obviously must give you some sort of confidence when you go forward.
A little bit, but I mean, I am really, really thankful that I've been the recipient of a handful of different awards. I've studied in the Netherlands for a time, and I've over the last couple of years, I've not been able to go for obvious reasons. That's hopefully going to change very soon, but I've won quite a few of awards for my journalism in the Netherlands and Travel Writer of the Decade in 2020, and I won an award writing about Canada as well. So yeah, it does help, and I think it gives editors and readers an element of confidence that I'm not just some kind of fly-by-night operator who is send the pitch, because I guess if you got major awards, then it kind of, they think, well, you know, there must be a reason for this, and if you can back that up with recent work that is, you know, of a high standard, then I think editors will hopefully then take things seriously. Or if I approach a destination, say I'd like to write about you, I'd hope that would give them confidence about me too. So that's why I think why awards are important.
When you get recognition, obviously it opens doors for you, but it's staying level-headed and continuously grow still at the same time, because if you think you've made it now, it's maybe where you might get a bit of a downfall. I've come across a couple of people actually recently who thought they were fantastic, the best things since sliced bread, but then when you look at, again, the quality is something that when you look at their work, maybe they kind of maybe not keeping up to the standards because they feel as though they've got to a stage. But I think this industry, as you well know it well, it's a very cutthroat industry where you're here today, but you could be gone tomorrow. So I think it's important to continuously stay grounded and
absolutely
moving forward.
I think setting yourself high standards is important. You've got to maintain them. You could say, in this industry, you're only as good as your last feature. You're only as good as your last blog post. And I think it is very, very important to bear in mind that kind of thing and strive for continuous improvement. Be mindful of trends within the industry, developments, and be open to learning. I think that's so, so important. I definitely made mistakes over the years. You know, I think without a doubt, that's the true. But every time I make a mistake, what I aim to do is to learn from it and ensure that and don't repeat that. I think it's so, so important to be self-critical, to be self-aware, and to try and move on and grow.
Learn from your mistakes, don't you? That's how you definitely grow. Failure as well. There's so many failures that I've gone through, and I think you learn from that more than your successes.
I think both. I mean, I think it'd be probably wrong to focus only on negatives. It's good to look at successes and to break them down. Why was that a success? But equally, if you do have an issue, it's worth looking at why, what happened, you know, what could I have done differently? And just thinking things through, talking perhaps with friends and colleagues, asking questions, what's your perspective? We've got a certain perspective of life, and it's good to get other people's viewpoints too, because our own is just one of many. Yeah. And I think that's important. And it's great when an editor gives feedback, because I always find it really good to learn from that, because it's one viewpoint, but the more viewpoints you can think about when you write, when you create, I think the rounder and better you are as a creator, as a writer.
I always used to listen to Roger Federer. I'm a big tennis fan. Roger Federer, you'd think, my goodness, he played an amazing match. Hardly any mistakes. But in the interview, you'd always say, I could have done maybe a couple of things better. And you're like thinking, what could you have done better? So I think that's where you look at the success, and let's just say, use the analogy, look at the match and you think, what can you improve? But you can always find something that you can improve to make yourself better.
I think it's getting that balance, because if you're trying to strive for perfection, it's almost like that might be a blockage to development. It might actually be something that makes you freeze and think, oh, I can't match that. I can't live up to that. So I think it's getting that balance right. But yeah, I think every time that I write something, I try and look at it and think, you know, what could I have done differently here, better? Sometimes it's a case of, you know, just really having different options that you could have put into a story, different ways of expressing things. Or one of the key things about storytelling is not just what you put in, but what you leave out. And that, you know, if you're on a trip, just go out in your local town today and try and write that story up in 1,000 words. There's going to be so much that you can't even get in because of the experiences that you have. And it's the key question is what's the important stuff? What, you know, what's going to be relevant to your audience? And it's just bearing that kind of thing in mind too. What do you leave out?
Talking a lot about your blog, your successes. So where would you like to see yourself in the coming months, coming years with the blog? And do you have anything planned project-wise?
There's no goal that I've set down on paper. I've had that kind of thing in the past. Right now, I've been doing a lot of work optimizing the site, trying to improve it visually. I would like certainly to write more frequently for major publications, for national newspapers. I would like to be producing regular quality features on GoEatDo that are fresh. I've done a lot of rewriting of late, because I've been bringing posts up to date, really refreshing them to an extent. But I think the real thing is to be out there creating new, fresh content. And ultimately, like many people, I'd like to see that at the end of a month, I'm bringing a nice bit of income home, going to eat well, live comfortably. And I think security is a key aspect of creativity. If you're comfortable, you can be creative. And what I mean by comfortable is just if you've got the security of wealth, it's like an energy for creativity. It gives you the freedom to sit down and write well. If you're struggling because your energy bills are too high, your income's too low, then it's very, very difficult to have the same creative mindset when you come down to try and work. And I think that's probably affecting a lot of people in the country and the wider world at the moment. And I think that's something to just bear in mind. But I want to be creative. I want to create quality features, quality blog posts. And I'd like to think that that would lead to an audience and income. So without setting numbers, that's what I'm going for.
What you've just said there will resonate with a lot of creative people. Security is really, really important in terms of producing your work. Because as you just said there, if you're not secure, then you might be doing stuff that you might not necessarily want, but you might think it's going to get you the paycheck. And that's really, really well said, actually. So I'm sure people have said it will resonate with them. So I'm going to wish you the best of luck with your blog, your writing. Where would you say, I'm sure there's been many, but where would you say was your first transformational experience when it comes to traveling?
One that really stands out, it was in Rwanda. I was in the Virunga mountain range, and I trekked up for a gorilla viewing experience. The guides were excellent. The and actually, the guide said, "Do you want your hour? You only had 1 hour with the family of mountain gorillas. Do you want your hour to start now?" I was like, "Well, why? There's nothing here." The next thing I knew, I got a basically a foot on my head. I had a broad-brimmed hat on, and there was a gorilla above me in the bamboo at that point, and it kind of stepped on me and then went back through the bamboo forest. We actually went down. I had a really close encounter with a female gorilla that happened there, but the real transformative thing that happened was sitting and watching these magnificent animals. I could barely believe that they were non-human because they're gestures, the way they treat each other, their interactions. And I actually cried at the time because when I was watching David Attenborough, you know, on his, I remember his, he had some interactions with gorillas and he was one of the inspirations for me. One of the reasons why I wanted to go out and experience the world and travel because of how he portrayed animals and, you know, engendered an interest in the planet. And so for me to be there and to see these magnificent creatures, to thankfully having the support of a great group of people around who'd made it possible, it was just one of those moments where I thought, my goodness, this is what I've really wanted to do since I've been a child. And I was sat there making photographs of these, you know, great animals. And it was one of those moments that I'll forever be thankful for.
Amazing experience. But I was going to ask you, did you get hurt by when the gorilla stepped on your head?
No, it was quite, I could tell by people's faces, were like, what's going on? They were still in front of me. I just didn't see it. What I could see when I turned around was fur and a kind of foot being retracted and going over the bamboo. So no, it wasn't painful at all. It was a shock, and it was also one of those moments of like, wow, can't believe that just happened.
And David Attenborough, by the way, is someone that I've been inspired by as well, watching him growing up.
I actually wrote to him a few years ago and I got him to sign one of the photographs that I took while I was out in the wild, and you know, wrote him a little letter thanking him for his inspiration. Uh-huh. And I sent a stamped addressed envelope. It came back and it was signed. So that to me,
oh, wow,
souvenirs of you know, of my travel writing career.
Just one more question before I let you go. With all the work that you do, have you sort of hobbies that you have that you sort of just sort of relax with?
I like to stay fit, so it might not look it, but that's something I'm striving to do. And I tend to go swimming 4 to 5 times a week. So I think it's really important to try and stay fit, because if you can stay fit, you can stay mobile, you can get out, you can do things. If you're trying to cycle up a mountain, and hopefully it's achievable. If you hike and walk and get to see things, and again, hopefully by staying fit, then it's something that's possible. And that's, I guess, it's not just because of doing what I do. It's not, but I think it's important that we try and, you know, try and stay fit and healthy. Try and eat well. Try and just. So I love cooking as well. So on Go Eat Do, there are,
of course, not.
There's some recipes on there, but you know, those are things that I like to try to that I cook, and I like to try new recipes. Not all of them are successful, but you know, it's always good to try and cook good, tasty, healthy food. And yeah, I like to do that.
You mentioned something there about the fitness. I think us as all, when you're traveling, staying, if you're not fit in terms of physically, not necessarily you have to have a six pack or whatever, but you might be doing a lot of walking, you might be sweltering with the heat, and if you're fairly fit, then you can last a long day and carry on the next day. It's sort of, so making sure fitness, your hike, you might be hiking the following day afterwards, it's just you staying on top of it. I think most people who travel, everyone that I speak to, they always say, staying fit is important going for your travels anyway. But I can understand the cooking as well, because with the Go Eat Do, I'm sure cooking is right up there as one of your main
ideas. Always when I'm on the road, trying the local delicacies, local foods, that's what I go for. And again, so that means that when I'm on the road, I might try and get up early to get out and photograph while the light's nice and soft on a morning. But even that, it's just a nice little bit of exercise to ease into the day with. And I think so that healthy balance is important.
So we've come to the end of our talk. It's great getting to know you. So for people who want to follow you and get in touch, what are your handles?
Go Eat Do, right across the board on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest. There's even a YouTube channel of late. If you want to see that, that's great, because I don't have that many followers on YouTube, so go on and get on there and follow that. And of course, there's the www.go-eat-do.com website. So, you know, it'd be great to hear from people, see people. If you drop a line, happy to answer if I've got a bit of time. Please do follow. It's always great to get feedback. If people have got questions, comments, get them on there, please do. So it's been lovely to be interviewed by you today. Lovely to meet you virtually. I look forward to doing so in person at some point in the not too distant future, and wish you all the best.
Likewise. Thank you so much. See you soon.
That's it for Take a Wonder with Shebs. Don't forget to follow me on all of my social media platforms. Until next time, bye for now.